Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for tuning in and welcome back. Today we're going to talk about telling time with ageless atoms. In previous shows, we have talked about atoms. We've talked about how Einstein proved that atoms really do exist. We've talked about what atoms are made of. And today, we're going to talk about how to tell time with atoms. Now, let's review some of the things that we've talked about regarding atoms before. As usual, we have some great images for you on our website. So while you're listening to the audio track, open up a second window. Go to our website, guidetothecosmos.com, and click on the microphone icon. There, select today's radio show, Telling Time with Ageless Atoms. In our first image on the website, we see a sketch of an atom. And basically, atoms are extremely simple. They just have two parts. How simple can that get? The inside of the atom is called the nucleus, and it has a positive electrical charge. The outside of the atom is called an electron cloud, and it has a negative electrical charge. And at least as far as electricity is concerned, opposite charges really do attract each other. And that's what keeps atoms together, which is a very important thing since we're all made of atoms. We don't want them to be falling apart. Atoms, as we know, are extremely small. And if you were to line up 1 billion carbon atoms in a row, they'd be about 1 foot long. Some atoms are about 3 times smaller than carbon, and some are about 3 times bigger, but that's about the full range that you get. So atoms are more or less about 1/1 of a foot long. Now, my sketch really isn't to scale, because in fact, the cloud of electrons is about 100,000 times larger than the nucleus. So if we were to enlarge an atom until the nucleus became the size of a golf ball, then the electron cloud would span a distance of over 2 miles. But even though the nucleus is so much smaller than the electron cloud, it's the nucleus that contains almost all of the atom's mass, almost all of the atom's energy, and it's the nucleus that determines all of the atom's important characteristics. So let's look inside the nucleus, and we can see there in image number 2 that the nucleus is made of 2 different types of particles. One type is called the proton, which has the positive electrical charge. The other type is the neutron, that has no electrical charge. Now, every atom in every nucleus has to have at least 1 proton so that there's a positive charge in the center that attracts the electron. Without that positive charge, there wouldn't be an atom. So every atom has to have at least 1 proton to have this positive charge, and it can have some number of neutrons. Often the number of protons and neutrons is the same. So in image number 3 on the website, we've listed some of the common atoms and how many protons and how many neutrons they have in their nucleus and how many electrons they have in their electron clouds. And we also show how abundant these different types of atoms are in both the universe overall and in a human body. So the most common atom by far in the universe is hydrogen. It amounts to almost 3/4 of all the mass of the entire universe, even though it's by far the lightest atom of all. And it simply contains one proton in its nucleus. It has no neutrons in the nucleus, and it has one electron which surrounds the proton. The next most common element in the universe is helium, the next simplest. It has two protons and two neutrons in the nucleus, and it has two electrons in the electron cloud that surrounds the nucleus. Helium is therefore about 4 times heavier than hydrogen, and it amounts to about 24% of all the mass in the universe. So, between 74% for hydrogen and 24% for helium, that adds up to 98% of all the mass in the universe that we can see and all the matter that we can detect is made of either hydrogen or helium. Everything else, the last 2%, is really very, very minor compared to hydrogen and helium. The next atom that we see is carbon, one of the most important atoms, of course, for biology, and it also contributes about 0.5% of the total mass of the universe. It has 6 protons and 6 neutrons and 6 electrons. Oxygen is next on the list with 8 protons, 8 neutrons, and 8 electrons, and it amounts to 1% of all the mass in the universe. So far, we're up to 99.5%, so everything else is very much less abundant than these atoms that we've shown already. As the number of protons increases, the electric charge in the nucleus gets larger and larger, and the number of neutrons that it takes to hold that together gets to be a higher percentage of the total. So, the atoms that we talked about so far have equal numbers of protons and neutrons, but when we move to much heavier atoms like iron, which has 26 protons, we need 30 neutrons to hold the nucleus together. It still has 26 electrons, the same as the number of protons, to make it electrically neutral. Iron amounts to about 0.1% of the entire universe. And when we go to the opposite end of the periodic table, to the heaviest atoms that exist, the heaviest stable atom is uranium. It has 92 protons held together by 146 neutrons for a total of 238 particles in its nucleus, and it has 92 electrons in its electron cloud. Uranium is an extremely rare substance and amounts to less than 1 part in a million by weight. And being heavy, it's even a smaller percentage by number of atoms. Now let's compare the abundance in the universe to the abundance in the human body. Hydrogen is 74% of the entire universe, almost 3/4, yet it amounts to only about 10% of the mass in a human body. Helium is almost totally absent from a human body and also from the Earth itself. In fact, helium was first discovered in the sun, and only later did scientists realize that there was actually some of that stuff on Earth as well. Carbon is very important for any form of life. It's the only atom we know that is able to form long-chain molecules and provide the backbone of all organic material. Carbon amounts to 18% by weight of the human body. And the primary ingredient of the human body is oxygen at 65% of the total weight of the human body, largely because we're mostly made of water, and oxygen is the most important, the heaviest part of water. So whereas oxygen only amounts to 1% of the total universe's mass, it's 65% of the mass of the human body. And everything else is much smaller. Iron, a critical component of our blood, is only about 1/20 of 1% of our total body weight. Now, that's some background about atoms. Now let's talk about how we can use atoms to date things. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we will be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back. You're listening to Guide to the Cosmos, and I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we're talking today about telling time with ageless atoms. Now, we've talked some about what atoms are like, and now let's see how we can use them to tell time, which is sort of remarkable because atoms themselves can't tell time at all. Atoms are too small to have a clock. In fact, they never age. They are perpetual. A hydrogen atom that was formed in the Big Bang 14 billion years ago is in exactly the same condition as a hydrogen atom that we might make in the laboratory today. There would be no difference whatsoever. Atoms don't get old. They don't have wear and tear. They are ageless. Now, that doesn't mean that they necessarily last forever. There are some atoms, in particular their nuclei, that are unstable. They are radioactive. And over time, they eventually fall apart. But it's not because the atom knows that it's time for the nucleus to fall apart. It's due to an interesting characteristic of quantum mechanics, which is different from anything that we experience in our macro world. In the micro world of molecules, atoms, and things that are smaller than that, the rules of quantum mechanics dominate, and they're quite different than what we're used to in the large-scale universe. So atoms can be unstable. You can think of it this way. Imagine that every morning the atom wakes up and it takes out its six-shooter, and it loads in three bullets, spins the chamber, and plays Russian roulette. With a six-shooter and three bullets, you have a 50% chance of survival. And so each day, half as many atoms would survive as there were the day before. So we would say that those atoms have a half-life of one day, meaning at the end of one day, there's half as many as you started with. At the end of the second day, there's a quarter as many. At the end of the 10th day, you have 1 in 2 to the 10th, or 1,000th as many as what you started with. But on the morning of the 11th day, each atom still has a 50-50 chance of surviving because it's going through the same process every day. And so even though the atom itself doesn't have a clock, it has a probability of decaying. And over time, that probability of decaying will cause the number of these atoms to gradually diminish. It diminishes in what we call an exponential fashion, and we characterize that again by this term half-life. During each half-life, each period of time, which is called a half-life, the number of atoms will decrease by a factor of 2. Now, I may have given you a silly analogy. Obviously, atoms don't wake up every morning. They don't have a six-shooter, and they don't load it with three bullets. Nonetheless, the part that does pertain to atoms is that over time, the number will decline, and it will be cut in half during each period of time, which is called a half-life. Some atoms have very short half-lives, maybe a second or even less. Some atoms have very long half-lives, in excess of billions of years in some cases. And some atoms seem to be completely stable, so they never decay. So there is this range of possible lifetimes that atoms can have. And we can use these characteristics to determine the age of something that we want to study. So let's use an example which is very commonly used in science called carbon-14 dating. Carbon, which is the essence of all living things, actually has three different versions that exist in nature. 99% of all the carbon atoms in the biosphere are what's called carbon-12. They have 6 protons and 6 neutrons, so that adds up to 12. Carbon-12, that's 99% of all the carbon in the biosphere. 1%, almost all that remain of the carbon atoms in the biosphere, are carbon-13. 6 protons and 7 neutrons, adding up to 13. Every carbon atom has to have 6 protons or it wouldn't be carbon. But it can have a different number of neutrons. And it turns out that in the biosphere, about 1 in every trillion carbon atoms is carbon-14, which has 6 protons and 8 neutrons. And that adds up to 14. Now, these carbon-14 atoms are continually being created when cosmic rays hit the Earth's atmosphere, which is largely made of nitrogen. Well, nitrogen, which has 14 particles in its nucleus, 7 protons and 7 neutrons, can be converted into carbon if the cosmic ray changes one of the protons in the nitrogen nucleus to a neutron. So if you start off with 7 and 7, and you change a proton to a neutron, you end up with 6 protons and 8 neutrons, which is carbon-14. So a small amount of carbon-14 is continually being created in the atmosphere. It amounts to a trillionth of all the carbon atoms that exist in our biosphere. And carbon-14 is unstable. Carbon-13 and 12 are both stable, but not carbon-14. Carbon-14 has a half-life of 5,730 years. And so that means that if you have a kilogram of carbon, which is about 2.2 pounds, that every minute there will be 14,000 carbon-14 atoms that are decaying. 14,000 per minute, even though carbon-14 is only 1 trillionth of all the carbon that you started with. So what does all this mean? Well, in the biosphere, plants are continually taking in carbon dioxide. They're building sugar molecules, and animals then eat the plants, and we eat both plants and animals. And so every living thing in the biosphere is continually taking in carbon, which has 1 trillionth of its atoms in the form of carbon-14, this radioactive carbon-14. Now, when an organism dies, it stops taking in carbon-14 and any other form of carbon, and the amount of carbon-14 in its body then starts gradually decreasing. It's not taking any more carbon-14 in, but its carbon-14 atoms are decaying because they're radioactive. And so over the years, the amount of carbon-14 will continually diminish. If you look at a living creature just after it dies, you're going to find out that there are 14,000 decaying carbon-14 atoms per minute for every kilogram of carbon in that organism. If you wait 2,865 years, which is half of a half-life, then the number of decaying carbon-14 atoms will drop to 9,900. If you wait for 5,730 years, which is one half-life after the organism dies, then you'll have half as many carbon-14 atoms decaying per minute, so you'll see 7,000 decays per minute. If you wait 17,190 years, which is three half-lives, you will have one half of one half of one half, three half-lives, or one-eighth of the original number of carbon-14 atoms left, and so they will be decaying at the rate of 1,750 decays per minute. That's one-eighth of the original 14,000. And if you wait 57,300 years, which is 10 half-lives, you will have 1 in 2 to the 10th, which is about 1,000th, or 14 decays per minute, compared to the original 14,000 decays per minute. So we can determine how many years it has been since the organism perished by measuring how many decays per minute we see in a given amount of carbon, using the fact that a certain small percentage of all that carbon started off being radioactive carbon-14. Now, that test will help us up to a certain point. If the object was hundreds of thousands of years old, then there would be so few carbon-14 atoms left that it would be very, very difficult to make the measurement. In principle, the logic still applies, but from a practical standpoint, the measurement simply doesn't yield the precision that we'd like to have. But that's not a problem, because there are lots of other atoms on the periodic table, and we can use some of them. And in the extreme case, we can use uranium, which has two isotopes that are of interest here. U-235 has a half-life of 700 million years, and U-238 has a half-life of about 4.5 billion years, which is pretty close to the age of the Earth. So that means that about half of the uranium-238 that was present when the Earth formed has already decayed. Another radioisotope of interest for dating these very old objects is thorium, which has a half-life of about 20 billion years. So that's how we can use ageless atoms to tell time. Thank you for tuning in, and remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.